The new year finds Hollywood awash in movie award announcements from entertainment groups, industry guilds, and critics circles. While women make up an increasing percentage of nominees in front of and behind the lens, the industry is still disproportionately male-centric. One group has been keeping a particularly keen eye on the status of women in Hollywood, the Alliance of Women Film Journalists. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. My guest today is Jennifer Marin, president of the Alliance of Women Film Journalists. The AWFJ has just released its list of best films and performances for 2015, including a few categories that you won't find anywhere else. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning.
I should also mention that you're joining us by phone from New York, and you're also the film critic for Women's E! News. It's been a while, a couple of years, I think, since we had you on the phone, but you're the founder and president of AWFJ. Why did you decide to start this group?
Well, we feel that, not that we feel, actually, we know that women make up at least 50% of the audiences, mm-hmm. and women audiences are very underserved in many ways. They do not find an adequate representation of women on film, and that is both a number and an image. And women do not have the same kind of opportunity in production, in front of or behind the lens.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes also for women's critical voices. We are not heard as loudly as the men are. And we feel that in order to serve the audience adequately, we all need to reevaluate and restructure everything.
It seems like you have a double hill to climb. Historically, film criticism, writing about film, has been predominantly from a male perspective and by male writers. But then of late, in the last decade, there's been an incredible shrinkage in the professional base of film critics. There's just fewer jobs, fewer people being employed and paid to do this full time. And it seems an even greater dearth in the last decade of representation of minorities and women writing about the cinema.
It's true, and that is certainly for professional standards. We have found a number of our members released from their duties just because of the opportunity is protracting, and they are getting bought out by very junior men in most cases who are willing to work for much less. There is an enormous proliferation of criticism on the internet, but it is not, much of it is not professional. And we do feel that the critical view is a very essential part of the dialogue about film, which is an essential part of our culture.
So what are we missing or losing when we have a low percentage of female voices in the critical sphere?
I mean, women are not relegated to liking chick flicks.
You might even be more harsh about those.
You know, I mean, we're not narrow in our view of what women like, let's put it that way, and we're not, you know, preachy about that.
Mm-hmm.
But we do feel that women look at things differently. It's just biological.
Yeah.
And
experiential. I mean, you experience the world differently.
Experiential as well, very much so, very much so. And we feel that our stories ought to be told on screen. What people see on screen very much influences their behavior in life, their expectations about what they're going to be and about what the future will be. And we feel that we have a major input there. We need to be heard.
Anyone who goes to your website at awfj.org will see not only your list of nominees and choices for the best performances of the year, but also some critical writing. And I think it's clear from viewing the website that your group is not necessarily champions of all things women, but really is about adding perspective to the films we see and the images we see. And one of your critics might be just as likely to enjoy The Hateful Eight and dislike a film like Joy.
You are absolutely right and very well spoken in that matter. We don't dictate, as I said, we do not dictate a woman's perspective. We are a collective of women who have very different interests, very different experiences in life, and all of that is reflected on our website where we aggregate reviews. We also have individual blogs that cover the industry and cover different genres. It's a very well-rounded, I think, woman's view or woman's perspective on the film industry as it exists today.
You and I are both members of the Broadcast Film Critics Association, who are next week putting on their Critics' Choice Awards. So it's been this time of year where I've been thinking about the year in general for film and looking for trends. And one of the fascinating things about 2015, which I imagine was extremely exciting for your organization, is just the number of films supporting really fine performances from actresses, jobs for actresses, and so many films that focused on female characters.
It's been amazing. A great joy for us, really. Characters that are both fictional and from history.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been a real exploration during this past year of women's characters, of women's behavior, of women's attitudes, of women's activity and activism on screen.
Some of which were actually written by women and also directed by women.
Absolutely. The one that comes to mind right away, of course, is Suffragette,
yes.
Which I don't think will not rise to an Oscar nomination, but is very much in our minds because it's about women and it's been produced by women and it's an amazing film. And Carey Mulligan leads an ensemble of women in that film that just... It's just beautiful. It's a wonderful thing to watch.
I was also thinking of the breadth of these. I mean, certainly some of these films are primarily about the female character or characters in the film, like Brooklyn or Carol or 45 Years, even Joy, Tangerine, Room, even Inside Out, the animated film from Pixar this year. But you also have films like Sicario, Emily Blunt's great performance in that, basically a male-dominated film that she carves out a big niche in. Some of the genre films it follows, Ex Machina, even Mad Max. I mean, frankly, I think you could have almost taken Max out of that film.
Absolutely. I mean, it's very nice to see Furiosa, you know, come into her full character there. You know, and she's a fully rounded character. And that's true also for Emily Blunt in Sicario. She is a complex, very well-developed character.
And the conscience of the film.
Exactly right.
The stand-in
right.
for
exactly
the audience.
Right.
In addition to all of these fine films that are focused on women or give opportunities for great actresses, I was also really pleasantly surprised at how many films this year allowed, shall we say, actresses of a certain age to act their age.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Charlotte Rampling is
yes, in 45 years.
Amazing. She's incredible in that film. And I mean, we have three, in our categories, we have an icon of the year, and we also have an actress defying age and ageism category. And
our
three nominees for the actress defying age and ageism are stunning in their performances this year. Charlotte Rampling in 45 Years, Lily Tomlin in Grandma, which is just a wonderful film and
yep.
very femme-centric, and Helen Mirren. Who just consistently, I mean, she's always our nominee for
right.
actress defying age and ageism because she just doesn't quit. And her characters are so strong and so definite in their proactivity in life. Her choices are wonderful.
Yeah, and with Helen Mirren, you know, I often think in other years, you know, she would be the main actress over 60 that we're talking about. But this year is just filled, you know, Cate Blanchett is not quite to 60, but she's certainly playing her age in the fine film Carol. I think of Joan Allen in Room. Even Jane Fonda in Youth, who certainly the way she's lit is showing her age and allowing herself to be shown in that light.
Exactly. And I think that it's wonderful because women like men deserve the right to age. And age brings wisdom and experience and a whole other perspective, and we need that on the screen.
Yeah, there was a lot of discussion on the internet about the appearance of Carrie Fisher in Star Wars, and a lot harsher than maybe it should be.
Yeah, and she has come out and said, listen, don't talk about my age. This is not what's at issue here. And I think that she's absolutely right, and I applaud her for speaking out like that.
Do you think that these number of films that are focused on women and women, female characters, and the number of films with women over a certain age just allowed to be themselves, is this just a funny year where we have this anomaly, or do you think there's a sea change going on here?
I don't know. I hope it's the latter. I mean, the interest in women in film is trending right now. There's a lot of commentary from major actresses of all ages about equal pay and equal opportunity.
Yes.
And filmmakers are going to, you know, the ACLU and demanding equal opportunity. It's major. This is a very large year trending for women in film. And, of course, trends are fads and fads fade. And I hope that this doesn't fade. You know, I hope that this goes on and that the chatter on the internet is not just letting off steam, but actually building up steam for a change.
I wonder, too, if Hollywood and filmmakers in general, producers, have finally recognized that a large portion of the theatrical audience, at least, are baby boomers, and that smaller films, authentic films about aging and people of a certain age, you know, are perfectly legitimate films to be making right now.
Yes, I hope so. I mean, there have been studies, Sundance Institute inaugurated a study. There have been studies that show statistically that women and women of age and, in fact, a diverse audience, there's marketing opportunity, and that there is a very, very large hunger and support for films that represent older people, people of color, women in general. So all of the stats are supporting the notion that film ought to be more diversified in its subject matter, its theme, and its the characters that are shown.
Well, I can't let you off the line without speaking to your special mention awards. You have things like categories like Best Depiction of Nudity, Sexuality, or Seduction, for which you've nominated Anomalisa, Carol, and Diary of a Teenage Girl. I presume because those are exemplars of how to do that on cinema.
That's exactly right. And they're all very different. They're all very, very different, but they are all very honest. And in each situation, in each film, the nudity is completely justified. It's not gratuitous. You don't have a woman's body there to, you know, titillate. And that's what we're trying to point out, that there is a difference. And people who are watching films ought to be aware of it.
One of your more critical categories, most egregious age difference between the lead and the love interest award. These are all films in which we have an actor primarily dating or in a romance with an extremely young actress.
Exactly. And again, these are, I think with the exception of one nomination, which I think, I'm not sure why it's there actually, but and that's Freeheld, because the characters are actually based on a true story and the characters did have that age difference. But our nominations just reflect what our membership believes. But in those cases, we're talking about gratuitous differences of age. In other words, there are age differences that occur that don't really, are not really part of or essential to what's being said or done in the story.
And an example would be Woody Allen's Irrational Man with Joaquin Phoenix and Emma Stone, maybe a hallmark of most Woody Allen films.
The older man,
younger woman. Well, Jennifer, it's always great to talk to you. I'm so excited that alliances like yours exist, and keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to speak with you always. You ask such good questions.
My pleasure. My guest today has been Jennifer Marin, president of the Alliance of Women Film Journalists. The AWFJ has just announced its year-end nominations for Best Films and Performances of 2015, and they include a few nomination categories you won't find anywhere else. For a complete list of nominations and award categories, as well as recent writings on the cinema, log on to awfj.org. A final program note, the Film Salon kicks off the new year with a new series surveying films adapted from the work of William Shakespeare, beginning with this evening's screening of the 1953 MGM musical Kiss Me, Kate at 7:30 p.m. The Film Salon meets at Trinity First United Methodist Church at 801 North Mesa, and all screenings are free of charge. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.